You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Yes, we have Dear Science again, as always. I'd hope so. One of the highlights of the Tuesday Wire.
Amongst everything else,
that's true. And we've got a loaded roster of Dear Science stories, as always. This week, a little bit on the downer end, but we're hoping to bring them up a little bit.
Yeah,
I'm hoping.
I don't know how we're going to do that, but yeah. They're a bit grim.
We've got some grim stories, maybe a Dear Science horror special or something along those lines. We'll start off with these neuroscience findings. This bit of a horror story about science.
Yeah, this isn't good, and this sort of thing crops up all too often these days, unfortunately. So we have a fellow here by the name of Eliza Maslia, and I apologize for a mispronunciation if that's not the right pronunciation. Probably a guy that I guess very, very few of you out there listening would have heard of, and I've got to admit I haven't heard of him until I saw this pop up in the news feed. So he's the head of Division of Neuroscience at the US National Institute on Aging.
So big figure in neuroscience.
Oh, yes indeed.
Yes.
Okay.
Household name.
And in charge of a $2.6 billion budget for this particular part of essentially the NIH.
Right. Okay. Handling a lot of money as well.
Oh, yeah. So he is a world-famous expert on Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, okay? So two of those diseases that are sort of associated with aging. He's published around 800 papers, which is just ridiculous.
Yep.
What are
we thinking? Yeah. What's the average, you know, if we're looking at academics?
Well, I've got just over 100. So,
right.
And, I mean, that's, you know, that's probably fair to middling. But
yep.
800 is, that's crazy.
Very, very upper end.
And he's very, very interested in synapse damage, mm-hmm. okay, which is the connection between neurons, which is your nervous system and the way that, that whole thing works, okay, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, in both diseases, so in both Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, and a particular protein called alpha-synuclein.
Ooh.
Okay, alpha-synuclein. And he just happens to be one of the highest cited researchers in this particular area. So your citations tell you basically how widely read and how widely accepted your work is. And so if you're up there in the list of citations, then you're the top people in the world.
And I'm sensing all of this is building up to something not so great.
It is. So over the last 2 years, some of his work has started to be called into question. And so there's an online site called PubPeer where people can sort of look at papers that have been published, and they can point out sort of flaws with those papers. And so there were a number of his papers that had ended up on the site, and people had started sort of saying, ooh, hang on, something doesn't look right
here. Yeah, right.
And so as a result of this, the journal Science, which is a very venerable science journal, hence the name, so they have worked together with two scientists who are very good at sort of spotting infelicities, let's say, in published papers, and they've come up with a 300-page report.
Wow.
Detailing, dare I say it, suspect images in 132 of his nearly 800 papers published from 1997 to 2023.
Pretty sizable portion there.
Yeah, it is, and that's not good. And so I quote from this, in our opinion, this pattern of anomalous data raises a credible concern for research misconduct and calls into question a remarkably large body of scientific work. And as a result of this, the NIH has made findings of research misconduct against Maslia, and he is now no longer in charge of the neuroscience division.
Yeah.
Okay.
That makes sense, right? 135, at some point that's not a mistake anymore.
Precisely. Okay. Mm. So, now people are sort of very, very careful to say, misconduct, alleged misconduct and all of this, as has to be said, because nothing has been proven.
Mm.
But basically what happens with a lot of these sort of cases is that we have image manipulation. So a lot of his sort of science relies on seeing things, basically,
right.
on pictures of these, let's say, things, for want of a better word, that show you where proteins are, basically.
Right.
Show you what proteins are and where they are.
Are we getting these from scans?
These are things called Western blots, okay?
Right.
And you're right. You get them as electronic files, essentially. And, of course, with anything electronic, these can be manipulated.
Yep.
And so if you want things to agree with your preconceptions, then it's easily done. You know, you Photoshop this, that, et cetera, et cetera. But, of course, this does leave artifacts which are visible to the very, very well-trained eye.
Yeah.
And that's what people have done. They have gone through a lot of his papers, and they have found definite image manipulation, basically.
Mm.
Now, why is this a problem? Well, number one, he's big in the area of Parkinson's and Alzheimer's.
Right,
and
hurting some credibility there.
Well, based on some of his work, a new Parkinson's drug has been developed.
Oh, uh-huh. Right.
Okay, so you can see where this is going.
Yep.
And so this has made it into clinical trials, and now, unfortunately, the clinical trials have showed no advantage of this drug over placebo.
Right.
Now, of course, clinical trials cost a bucket load of money.
I can imagine.
Absolute bucket load of money. And so to have this amount of work called into question over this time period too, 1997 to 2023, and what often happens is that you might get a rogue researcher over a small period of time who does this sort of thing to further their career, you know, and it's not the main person.
That's the sort of thing you expect, right?
Yeah, it's not necessarily the head honcho that does these sorts of things.
Mm.
But in this case, over this prolonged time period, the only common person's name on all of these papers is
just this guy.
Okay.
Mm.
And, you know, so this has caused a massive, massive uproar in this field. You know, people just basically can't believe that this has been happening. You know, this guy has, you know, a long respected career in his chosen field. And for now, now for all of this sort of stuff to come out, you know, the ramifications of this are just going to be massive.
Yeah.
And we'll see, I guess, what happens, but I can't really see that he's going to be in that particular job for much longer.
No,
he's already been, you know, stood down as the head of this National Institute on Aging, or the Division of Neuroscience. So, you know, who I really feel sorry for are the people who are suffering from these diseases. And again, you know, his idea about this protein alpha synuclein, you know, and he's sort of invoking this as being important in Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And now the obvious question comes, well, hell, is it?
Yeah, maybe we're putting back Parkinson's research.
Exactly. Have we been barking up the wrong tree for the past, you know, 10, 20, 30, whatever years?
Yeah, right.
And, you know, the amount of money that would have been thrown at this problem, you know, oh dear, it just beggars belief. It really is an absolute tragedy. And as I say, sadly, it does happen all too frequently. And I guess it just serves to remind us that science is a very perfect discipline, which is carried out by imperfect humans.
Mm, we must ensure that we're remaining accurate at all times.
And what gets me is that, you know, if you're going to do this, to think that you can possibly get away with it, I just can't see it. You know, there's just so many now checks and balances. People are so into making sure that everything is right, and your work is under enormous scrutiny. You
know, 8 billion people.
And look, if you're going to be a fraud, don't, for goodness sake, make a big bloody discovery.
Yeah,
because that's just stupid, because that's going to be scrutinised all over the show. Do some middling level stuff, you know. Doesn't have to be world beating or anything like that. There's a hint to all your potential fraudsters out there.
Yeah, but aspiring frauds should aim
for the middle.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. But, you know, all joking aside, this is just terrible, and this is a story that will keep running for quite some time, I think, and we certainly haven't seen anywhere near the end of this. So,
Wow. Keep tuned in
good.
For that.
Not good.
And then Franklin Expedition, another downer, but maybe, I don't know, this is a mystery, right, that we're unsolving now, I guess.
Yes, yes. And it's a mystery about a person's identity, basically. Mm. So, Franklin Expedition. This is just an amazing story. It's always resonated with me that you know that a bunch of people can just disappear off the face of the earth,
yeah.
and nobody know what happened to them. You know, kind of like that Malaysian Airlines flight.
Yes,
that's
the
modern day equivalent, I guess, of the Franklin Expedition.
2014.
Gosh, when was it? Oh, sheesh, has it been that long?
Yeah,
already?
No, wow. I felt odd saying that.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it was.
So we go back to 1845.
Mm-hmm. While before 2014.
And a while. And a guy by the name of Sir John Franklin. And he was tasked with leading two boats to find the Northwest Passage, the fabled Northwest Passage, which would enable you to go from the Atlantic to the Pacific, over the top of Canada and round Alaska, basically.
Very convenient.
And that would make things a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. And so he was in command of two boats and 129 men.
Mm-hmm.
And so they left in 1845, made it to the very north of Canada, all in those big islands and everything up there. And they were never seen again, basically. And the wrecks of the ships were not discovered until 2014 and 2016.
Quite a while after.
Which is amazing.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
And the only record of what happened to them was a note that was written in both 1847 and 1848.
Right.
On Admiralty paper or whatever. And it was found in a cairn of rocks in 1859.
Mm, just like randomly on the coast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So obviously they had people going out looking for them and everything.
Yep.
And this, you know, this was found, you know, a good 14 years after they'd set off. So... Mm. So this note said that 24 of the crew basically had died, including Franklin, and that the survivors were going to walk to a settlement about 400 kilometres south of there.
In Canada as
In
well.
In Canada, so yeah, north of Canada.
Freezing.
Yeah. So you can imagine it's going to be a bit grim.
Yeah. Not the kind of journey you want to be making on foot.
No. Now, why did they die? So the theory was, until recently... the theory was that they died of lead poisoning, or that had certainly interfered with their mental processes.
Very common, right?
And the thing was that they had lots of preserved food, in tins.
We were discussing the Antarctic expedition.
And they soldered the tins with a lead-based solder, and that was the theory. But then more work has shown that. That the average amount of lead in just normal British seafarers versus these guys was basically the same.
Right.
There was the very high
worrying,
lead. And so they're sort of thinking, well, you know, maybe they ate bad food or badly preserved, you know, meat or something like that, but they're not sure. Anyway, what they did find eventually were unidentified skeletal remains.
Yes.
And unfortunately, these skeletal remains showed signs of cannibalism, which ain't great.
Not great there.
And so what has finally happened is that they've published a paper, and on the basis of DNA and genealogical data, they have finally figured out who belongs to one set of skeletal remains.
Right. That's pretty big deal, right?
Yep.
200-year-old skeletal remains, you can say.
And these were those of Captain James Fitzjames. The wonderful name there, James Fitzjames.
James Fitzjames.
And he was the captain of one of the ships.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, his jawbone showed signs of cannibalism.
Yeah.
So, a bit nasty. And so I guess, so the big thing is that they've now managed to be able to... absolutely identify some of the skeletal remains. And very interestingly, sort of interviews with Inuit sort of at around the sort of 1850s, 1860s or whatever, they had actually seen these people sort of dragging a boat.
Makes sense.
Yeah. But I suppose they never thought to ask the Inuit for help or whatever. I don't know. And that's the big mystery of the thing that just nobody knows.
Nobody knows what happened.
It's just going to be a mystery. A mystery.
And maybe in another 200 years we'll find another morsel of information.
Yeah, very possibly. You never know. Mm. Yeah.
And then lastly here, we've got this compound, is it?
Yes,
am
it
I
is.
Learning,
it, is a, it is a thing.
I'm learning chemistry over time.
Yep.
That I cannot pronounce, but I'll attempt once again. It's thalidomide?
Thalidomide, very good.
Thalidomide.
Very good.
Got it.
And whenever I bring this up in my first year lectures, because it's a staple of chemistry, this drug, it's got to the point now where basically the students have never heard of it.
I have no idea what thalidomide is.
Wow.
I had to Google it. I now know it's a cancer drug.
Well, it's more than a cancer drug. More than a cancer drug. So on this day, so October the 1st, that's why we're talking about it today. On October the 1st, 1957, thalidomide was put into the shops, essentially, in Germany. So it was released in Germany. And what it was used for was a morning sickness prevention. Okay, so it's a morning sickness prevention drug.
Right.
And so pregnant women would take this. And it did the job brilliantly, okay? It relieved morning sickness superbly. Before they released it, they didn't have any human trials. They had animal trials, you know, seemed to not
Worked
be
fine.
Toxic or anything like that. Now, after it was released, and it was released all around the world, then there was this massive spike in birth defects. So kids being born, and there were terrible things. So kids basically being born with little sort of rudimentary arms, flappers, you know, for arms and legs and things like that. Just absolutely dreadful. And
massive degree of,
around about 10,000 children around the world were
Huge
were born.
Number.
Yeah. And there were some in New Zealand. There was some quite famous ones here in Aotearoa. And so it was eventually linked back to thalidomide, the drug. And this was causing the problems. And so they basically stopped it in 1961.
Yep.
And it cost them an awful lot of money, obviously, to in lawsuits and stuff like that because of these terrible, terrible, terrible birth defects. And now you might sort of think that would have been the end of it, but it was found to have some efficacy in the treatment of both cancer and leprosy.
As I found just before.
And so it is on the UN list of, what's the word? I've forgotten.
Of necessary
drugs or something like that.
Drugs,
And so obviously, with the proviso that it can't be taken by pregnant women because it causes these birth defects.
Yeah, naturally.
And you sort of think, well, you know, how did this come about? How didn't they know and everything? And this is the whole first year lecture, but basically thalidomide can exist in two forms and they are related like your right hand and your left hand.
Right.
They are what we call non-superimposable mirror images of each other.
Yep.
Okay. One of those forms is a brilliant, potent morning sickness suppressant.
Yep.
The other one is a teratogen, meaning that it causes birth defects. So something is simple. So it's the same molecule.
Yep.
It's just that they're mirror images of each other.
And you can't separate it?
Yes, you can.
Oh, you can?
You can separate it, but they didn't think to do that. And even that wouldn't help because you put it in the body and it converts to the other one. And this is a fascinating part of chemistry called stereochemistry, which hey, anybody wants to know, come along to my first year lectures. I'll tell you all about it. But so, you know, on this day, just a terrible, terrible mix up, you know, and as I say, you know, it was a big, big, big story back in the day. But now, you know, sufficient time has elapsed, and precisely nobody's heard of it, which will never fail to amaze me.
We've just re-educated any of you who hadn't heard of thalidomide beforehand. Now you know. Don't take it if you're a pregnant woman, but maybe do take it if you have cancer.
Or leprosy,
because it will help out there. Well, we've ended up on a pretty... I guess a bit of a downer note still, but
I know.
Returning maybe to a bit of a high note, we've got some music, we've got some things for you to enjoy in a brief break, and then afterwards we'll be talking about the Dunedin Council developments. That's been Dear Science. Thank you, Alan.
Okay.
Thank you, Mota, and thank you, Science. We'll be right back. Keep it on the B.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.